You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. This is Corbin Smith, host of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. Glad to have you listening in on this sunny Thursday. We're only 2 days away from Seattle's next preseason game. In fact, you guys are going to get 2 games in 5 days, starting on Saturday. So a lot of Seahawks football coming up. A bit of a programming note, we had to alter our plans a bit for today. Originally, Rob Rang and I were going to do our latest 53-man roster projection. Rob couldn't join in for the show. Some things came up. So we will be postponing our next 53-man roster projection episode until after Saturday's game. And ultimately, this may be a good thing. We should have a pretty good idea where players stand at that point with 3 preseason games down. Still got a jam-packed episode on tap for today. We'll kick off with some of the latest news out of the VMAC, including the impending return of first-round pick LJ Collier. In the second quarter, I'll be opening up the mailbag. You guys have tons of questions. I'm going to try to answer as many as I can. Some about the Seahawks, there's a few XFL questions mixed in there as well. And then in the third quarter, I'll start delving into Saturday's third preseason game. Which players am I going to be watching most closely in LA? Fantasy football players, make sure you listen to Vinny Iyer and the Locked On Fantasy Football Podcast. Vinny gives you the edge with over 20 years covering fantasy football. Don't listen to the same stuff as everyone else. Get the edge from Vinny that will put you ahead on draft day and put you ahead all season long. Locked On Fantasy Football on your favorite podcast provider. Lots of injury news and roster movement coming out of the VMAC over the past 48 hours. You tend to see quite a bit of roster shuffling this time of year. Guys start to get banged up and you need to move in. Maybe you need to get an additional guard or maybe you need an additional safety. And guys near the end of the roster tend to be shuffled through quite a bit. The Seahawks aren't an exception to this rule. So they made a couple of minor additions the past few days. That offensive line has been ravaged by injuries. That second unit especially, we saw that the other night with them trying to block for Rashad Penny and the running backs, as well as Paxton Lynch. It was ugly for the skill players because they just didn't have time to do anything, didn't have anything to work with. So the Seahawks made a few additions here. They signed guard Landon Turner and tackle Brian Wallace. Demetrius Knox was placed on injured reserve with a quad injury that Pete Carroll called a nasty one. So he was definitely heading towards injured reserve. And they released safety Jalen Harvey, who hasn't really been able to get healthy anyway, the former Arizona State standout, given an opportunity to compete in the secondary, didn't really have much of a chance with the depth they have at the position anyway. Turner, he played at North Carolina. He signed undrafted with the Saints last year. Then he spent time with the Vikings and the Panthers on their practice squads. As for Wallace, he went undrafted out of Arkansas. This is a guy that started 29 games for the Razorbacks. He was a 4-star recruit when he went to Arkansas. Never quite lived up to that billing playing in the SEC. Signed to the Broncos and lasted 1 week. Since then, he's been trying to latch on to another team. He worked out for Seattle earlier this summer. He's also worked out for the Dallas Cowboys. So they brought Wallace in with Jamarco Jones trying to come back from an injury that cost him the last preseason game. George Fant still out with an ankle issue of his own. They needed some depth reinforcements at the tackle spot as well as at guard. Think about how many injuries they have there. You add Knox to the equation. They already were without Phil Haynes and Mike Iupati. Those guys were banged up. So certainly this is a group that needed some reinforcements. And Turner and Wallace will both get some chances to play significant snaps against the Chargers, I believe, in the second half. These guys are going to get a quick turnaround, and they're going to get some snaps to try to help that offensive line. On the injury front, mostly positive news this week, and a key there, mostly, there's a few things that are not so positive. First and foremost, no Paxton Lynch this week. If you were watching the game on Sunday night, just took a brutal hit to the helmet from Holton Hill, cornerback for the Minnesota Vikings. An inexcusable hit at this point in time. These rules have been in place long enough. Yeah, maybe Lynch could have slid a little bit earlier, but Hill, there's no excuse. There's no excuse for that hit. So Lynch suffered a concussion. The Seahawks are going to be very careful with him. He is not practicing at all this week. He's not going to play in the game against the Chargers as well. So Geno Smith, who's now coming back from minor knee surgery, he's back at practice. He's going to get a bunch of reps against the Chargers with Lynch being sidelined. A great opportunity for him. DK Metcalf underwent a minor surgery with minor findings, according to Pete Carroll. Interesting verbiage there. Still no idea what specifically was done for the second round pick, but the Seahawks are pretty optimistic he'll be back in short order. They're listing him as week to week. Week one still looks like a real possibility, though me personally, I would be a little surprised. Maybe he'll be able to get back that quickly, but just have to wait and see. Back spasms have held Marquise Blair out of practice the past 2 days. He actually left on a cart at the Vikings game from the sidelines in the second half with that back issue. And if you've ever had back spasms before, they can last several days and then they can just magically disappear. So he's day-to-day right now. Probably not going to play against the Chargers based on the fact he hasn't practiced the last couple days, but I guess he can't completely rule it out at this point. And then this is the big news for the Seahawks out of their rookies. LJ Collier returned to the practice field today, mostly as a bystander, but still, this is an encouraging baby step. He participated in warm-ups and did some conditioning drills today on the practice field. Pete Carroll says the next obstacle for him to overcome is going to be changing direction. He's still not able, as Carroll said, to load off that ankle to be able to turn, change direction quickly. So that's the next step for him. Once he's done that, then he's going to be in good position to get back to the football team. Much like Metcalf, we'll have to wait and see if he's going to be available for week one. I mentioned Phil Haynes, his injury. He's been out recovering from sports hernia surgery the entire training camp and preseason so far. He's doing some work, but he's going to be pushing it to try to make it back for week one. There's a real chance the fourth round pick out of Wake Forest could stay on the PUP list, and that means he's going to be out the first six games for the Seahawks. That's not ideal for a player that had a really nice offseason for them and then surprisingly had that surgery before the start of training camp. He's a guy they certainly are high on, would like to get him in and get some work, but he's trying. He's working as quickly as he can, getting back from that injury, and right now is up in the air if he's going to be able to get back for week one. Nas Jones is dealing with knee tendonitis. He has not been able to get this situation remedied. A lot of people have been asking me, why haven't we heard anything about Nas Jones? Well, he hasn't been able to get on the field and stay there. So this third-year defensive tackle, he's clearly on the roster bubble. Not being able to play is only hurting his chances. Maybe he's an IR candidate as well. If that happens, he's done for the season. The Seahawks can stash him while he tries to get this knee healthy. Just have to wait and see. They haven't been able to get it calmed down to this point. Shaquin Griffin also still dealing with a bruised knee. Sounds to me like he's pretty close to being back, but still having a little bit of pain there. Maybe a bit concerning given his standing on the team right now, but doesn't seem like it's as serious as Nas Jones. And Lano Hill, his hip, he's finally going to play on Saturday. CJ Procise and JD McKissick will also be back in the lineup. So three players that haven't played at all in the preseason to this point. Expect to see those guys get some snaps in LA. Coming up in the second quarter, you've got Seahawk questions. I'm going to try to answer as many as I can during our mailbag segment. Crushing it at work, or maybe you're laser focused on beating that boss level on your latest video game? That doesn't mean you shouldn't eat. DoorDash can help you get your next meal from your favorite restaurant in minutes. DoorDash connects you to your favorite restaurants in your city. Whether you're in Seattle, LA, New York City, it doesn't matter. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be delivered to you wherever you are. Not only is your favorite pizza joint already on DoorDash, but there are over 340,000 restaurants in 3,300 cities. So you might find a new favorite too. With door-to-door delivery in all 50 states and Canada, order from your local go-tos or choose your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and Chick-fil-A. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the promo code LOCKEDON. That's $5 off your first order when you download the DoorDash app from the App Store and enter promo code LOCKEDON. We'll be back after the break. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Later in the show, I'm going to break down why the third preseason game is typically the most important, and I'm going to highlight a few players I'll be watching most closely when the Seahawks battle the Chargers. And I'm going to give you this little tidbit here. They're not all bubble players. Some of these guys are going to be on the roster, so certainly going to be an interesting discussion. But first, it's time to open up our mailbag and answer some of your most pressing Seahawks and NFL questions Tons of great ones today. Let's get rolling. The first one coming from Casey Reynolds. Casey tweets, when Jaren Reed comes back, will he and Puna Ford be on the field at the same time? If so, what is the nose and which one is the three tech? This is a great question, Casey. I definitely would expect that you're going to see Puna Ford and Jaren Reed on the field quite a bit together. They had quite a few snaps on the field together in December last year, and they were really effective as a duo. This was supposed to be the starting duo at the defensive tackle positions for the Seahawks going into this season. Obviously, Reed's suspension throws a bit of a wrench into those plans, but when he comes back, I definitely expect these two are going to play side by side quite a bit. They've got a number of other players that can rotate in as well. When these two are on the field together, both players can play each spot. Jaren Reed can slide down and play one tech. He can play three techs. Ford can play both positions. But I would think Ford is playing nose and Jaren Reed is playing the three tech spot under those circumstances. Ford played really well at the nose when given chances last year. I think that he holds his own at the point of attack, regardless of where he lines up. His low center of gravity, I think, actually works as an advantage when he's playing that nose position as well. So I think when both those guys are on the field, you could certainly see it being an interchangeable thing. They could play both spots, but me personally, I think Ford plays the nose and Reed plays that three tech. Gives him a little better chance to be a pass rusher, which is a real strength for Jaren Reed. So I'm excited. I'm fired up to see those two together. Unfortunately, have to wait until the seventh game to be able to see those two back on the field at the same time. Jackson tweets, thoughts on the name choice for the new XFL team and logo in Seattle. Which one is your favorite and which one's your least favorite? Really a good question, Jackson. As far as the Seattle team, as you know, looking at the team and logo, it's not horrible. I don't know. I'm not going to say it's bad. I have nothing against it. I just can't get super fired up about naming a team in Seattle the Dragon. There were much worse alternatives, so I guess it could be a lot worse than Dragons. The logo kind of looks like UAB. If you've ever watched college football, it looks like the UAB Dragons, and not a bad logo. It's decent. It could have been a lot worse. As far as the other teams go, just a fun fact about me, I love making uniforms. This used to be my favorite part about NCAA football was the team builder feature, because you could build your own logos and uniforms and stuff. I love what the Houston Roughnecks did, because they paid homage to the Houston Oilers with their logo, and it's still a shame to me that there is not a Houston Oilers team in the NFL. So it's cool to see a minor league is going to be paying homage to them, the Oilers with so much history. Really neat. As far as my least favorite, the LA Wildcats. You want to talk about a generic team name and logo. And I don't know why this eats at me so much. Why does it feel like every team that is in LA has to try to be a copycat to the Dodgers and have a logo that's incorporating the L and the A, those two letters crossing each other? Seriously, it's been done so many times. There's no creativity to it. It's boring. And they did that with this XFL logo. Come up with something better. I think it would be pretty simple to do that. I mean, heck, even if they would have just had a simple Wildcat on there, it would have been better than sticking with this LA cross letters crap. I just am not a fan of it. It's not creative at all. So they would certainly be the one that I'd be least impressed by. Maxwell tweets, what do you think the likelihood of the Hawks not keeping Gary Jennings on the final 53 is if he doesn't produce against the Chargers on Saturday? I've talked about this quite a bit in this podcast. I still personally believe Gary Jennings is going to make this football team. They really like him. The biggest issue, he got off to a rough start. He was injured at the beginning of the offseason. He had to play catch-up. He's still playing catch-up. Finally, over the last week or so, he's really started to stand out at practice. He was pretty quiet during the early stages of training camp, and a lot of it just had to do with the fact I don't think he was playing full speed. He was still trying to play catch-up, and that is never a good situation for a rookie, regardless of when you were picked. The Seahawks have precedent here. They have released a fourth-round pick at the end of training camp of his rookie season before. They did it with Chris Harper back in 2013. Some of you have pointed out Kevin Norwood. Norwood played for the Seahawks as a rookie. He was cut or traded away to the Panthers before his second season with the team for a fifth round pick. So they got rid of him fairly quickly, but he spent one season with the Seahawks. The one outlier here is Chris Harper. It has happened before. Jennings has a lot of depth that he's going to be going up against. There's several players like Jazz Ferguson that have had really strong training training camps and preseason up to this point. So he's got to do something. He's got to produce. And I don't want to put too much stock in the preseason games, but it would be really nice to see him make a couple catches and just get a little confidence. The film I've seen, this is a guy that can be a big playmaking threat for you out of the slot, out of the outside, but he's got to show that he can do it. And right now, there's enough competition there. They're not going to be able to keep more than five or six receivers. That means he is certainly not guaranteed. I think he makes this football team, but I'm with you. I think he's got to do something. It certainly increases his likelihood of getting cut if he lays another egg this weekend. Brutus DM writes on YouTube, who will be trade bait for the Seahawks? So this is kind of following up what I talked about yesterday. The Seahawks have made a lot of trades during late August, early September, since Pete Carroll and John Schneider arrived in 2010. They've made seven trades between August 23rd and September 2nd in just the last two seasons alone. So they like to be aggressive and make moves to upgrade their roster at the end of training camp, end of the preseason. I think that you're looking at a little different situation than the past two seasons, because as far as position, they have depth. Normally, they've been making trades for nickel corners, safeties, things like that. And those are two positions I think the Seahawks are actually pretty good with right now. They've got an intense four-player competition going on at slot corner. Safety, they've got five or six guys that are good enough to make the roster. So I look at this group, maybe they'd be willing to move one of those safeties out of town. They've got some guys there that are good enough to be on an NFL roster. Maybe there's a team that's hurting at the position. Maybe they had injuries or the depth's just not good enough. Maybe they can move a safety. Maybe one of those receivers that I mentioned. How crazy would it be if Gary Jennings as a rookie ended up being traded away? I'm not saying it's going to happen, but certainly with the depth they've got at that position, they've got some guys there that are NFL caliber receivers that aren't going to make this football team. Maybe there's another team that's lacking in that department and is willing to make a trade that involves a sixth or seventh round pick, or maybe even a conditional pick. That may be worth it to the Seahawks. So they could do that. Maybe a linebacker. They've got a lot of depth at that position as well. Otherwise, I don't really see anything, any other position where they're going to be trading guys away. I know a lot of people have thrown Rashad Penny's name out there. I don't see the Seahawks trading him away, and I definitely don't see them trading Rashim Green away. When you look at the depth they've got at defensive end right now, they can't afford to move on from him, and he's still a really young player that has a lot of upside. So they're not going to be trading those two guys. I could see a safety, maybe a receiver, maybe a linebacker, maybe somebody like Austin Kalitro impresses enough in the preseason that the Seahawks can get something back in return for him via trade. But I don't see any big names getting moved here. Micah Kiali writes on YouTube, should we consider bringing Melvin Gordon to Seattle if we could afford to sign him? And I'm going to immediately just say no on this. I like Melvin Gordon. I think he's a pretty darn good running back. You look at him statistically, though, he's had some issues with staying healthy. He's had some injuries in his career so far with the Chargers. And I think the money that he is commanding, it doesn't make any sense for anyone to pay that. There are a few running backs out there that I could see getting the paycheck he's asking for, but I look at his injury history and overall production, as good of a player as I think he is when healthy, I can't justify paying him that. The Chargers have a pretty easy situation right now. They're just sitting back and letting their other running backs get the carries, and they're not going to stress trying to pay Melvin Gordon. The Seahawks, unless they had injuries come up, if one of their top couple backs got hurt, then maybe they would call the Chargers to see, you know, about trying to swing a trade, because they like to run the ball as much as any team in the league. But I'm going to say there's absolutely no chance that this happens. It wouldn't make any sense for them to do it right now anyway. Justin writes on Facebook, biggest surprise in a positive and negative way for the Seahawks so far in training camp in the preseason. Well, the biggest positive, this is an easy one for me, it's been Ugo Amadi. No question about it. When I did a film breakdown looking at him at Oregon, I loved the fact that he could do so many different things. He could line up near the line of scrimmage and blitz. He could play nickel corner. He could play free safety. I was just wondering where he was going to fit on the Seahawks roster as far as, you know, he's only 5'9". He's a smaller guy. I worried about change of direction a little bit in the slot, and that still may be something that ends up becoming an issue, but I just love the football player that Ugo Amadi is, and that textbook tackle he made on punt coverage the other day that everybody continues to rave about, and rightfully so. That's one of the best tackles I have seen in a long time. He's a great special teams player. He's done some really nice things defensively. He's shown high football IQ on the field regardless of what he's doing, and so he's exceeded any expectations I had to this point. As far as negatives, I'm not really somebody that likes to look at negatives too much. I don't think there's really a player who has underperformed to the point where it surprised me. A lot of it just has to do with availability. Maybe Jennings goes on this list. I would have liked to see him get more involved. But Nas Jones, I'm really disappointed he can't get healthy and try to build off that strong rookie season they had a couple years ago. It really looks now like he's on the outside looking in here. Maybe they can stash him to IR, but he's been passed by several players on the depth chart, and he's not healthy, just not a good situation. Not being able to see Phil Haynes or DeMarcus Christmas at all to this point, there's disappointment to that. Obviously, all the rookie injuries in general, that's been disappointing. But as far as players underperforming, there hasn't really been somebody that just stood out to me like, wow, I really thought this guy was going to light it up, and he's been terrible. There haven't been any players that have really fit that bill in the first couple games. When I return, it's on to the preseason game number 3. I'm going to zero in on 8 players who I will be watching most closely against the Chargers on Saturday. Don't go away. You are listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith. On Saturday, the Seahawks will be squaring off with the Chargers, one of their regular preseason opponents. It seems like these two teams play every August. And I've mentioned this before on the show, a lot of it has to do with geography. The NFL is trying to limit how much these teams travel in the preseason, hence why the Seahawks play the Broncos, the Chargers, the Raiders, pretty much every preseason. Tomorrow's show will be completely dedicated to previewing the Chargers, who should be a Super Bowl contender in the AFC, though they do already have some injuries that they are dealing with. Certainly a big-time injury to safety Derwin James, who could end up missing the entire season. We'll be covering all of that tomorrow. First off, the new Locked On NFL podcast is on fire. Last week, it was one of the most listened to NFL shows, with the expert analysis of former NFL scout Matt Williamson and hosted by Brian Peacock. Locked On NFL is your daily national podcast on all things NFL with Matt's unique take on the game. Follow Locked On NFL now with your favorite podcast provider. Things have changed a little bit with joint practices becoming the rage in the NFL. Some teams aren't playing starters much even in the third preseason game now. They're not seeing the value from it, the benefits of playing their starters a handful of snaps in a game that doesn't count in the standings when they can get meaningful snaps against other NFL teams on the practice field. But typically, this is the true dress rehearsal for NFL teams going into the regular season. And I expect, based on what Pete Carroll said yesterday, that the starters will get some pretty good run in against the Chargers. So who will I be watching most closely? This isn't all about the reserves. This will be a good measuring stick for some players who may have larger roles as well. Starting on the offensive side of the football, I've got to start with quarterback Geno Smith. Paxton Lynch last weekend against the Vikings had a prime opportunity to cement the backup quarterback job, coming off of an excellent outing against the Broncos where he completed most of his passes. He led 3 straight scoring drives. He was the rage last week. Everybody was talking about Paxton Lynch winning that job. And then he goes out, and not all of this was his fault. The offensive line certainly didn't help his cause with poor pass protection, but only completed 6 passes against the Vikings. The Seahawks were only able to muster a couple of field goals when he was in the game. No touchdown drives. Wasn't able to really take advantage of his opportunity. And then he takes that wicked hit from Holton Hill, and that knocks him out for this week. So now the tables have completely turned. It's a 180-degree change from last weekend. Now Geno Smith is going to be getting the bulk of the snaps behind Russell Wilson, and this is a prime chance for him to re-secure the clipboard duty behind Wilson. Great chance for him to build off of what was not really a good first outing for him starting in place of Wilson. He was 3-for-8 against the Broncos. He's got a chance to really improve upon that, orchestrating the second offensive unit. We'll see if he can take advantage. If he's unable to do so, then that opens things up for Lynch going into that preseason finale against the Raiders to try to win the job. In the backfield, Rashad Penny, I've talked about him already on the show. He's been the most discussed player out of Seattle the past few days. I just wrote up a lengthy article on Seahawk Maven discussing all of the criticism that's being heaped up on the second year back at this point. And it's unfortunate. You don't want to see that happen, but he's a first round pick from the 2018 season. And that, you know, you have incredible expectations for first rounders, especially running backs. The way that analytics are painting running backs now, fans are expecting, if you're a team and you bring in a first-round running back, that guy becomes the guy. He ends up becoming your feature back, and the expectations are through the roof to be able to justify that selection. So to some extent, I can understand why the criticism is happening. It's warranted to an extent. But for those that are coming out and saying Rashad Penny is a bust, I take serious issue with that, especially if they're making that argument on what we saw last Sunday. I don't care who's in the backfield behind that second, third, fourth string offensive line the Seahawks were putting out there against the Vikings. They'd have no fighting chance to get yardage. Most of the plays where Rashad Penny was getting the football, most of his carries, there was at least one defender in the backfield when he got the football. You can't make anything happen, and yet a lot of these people expect that the running back is just going to make magic happen, and he's going to sidestep a couple tacklers, and then he's gone. That's not how things work. I think Penny's got the talent to make guys miss and break tackles, but it's difficult for anybody to do it when guys are hitting you as you get the football in the backfield. So I am really hoping, and Pete Carroll has made it clear that this is not something they're prioritizing necessarily, but I would like to see a few carries from Rashad Penny behind that starting offensive line on Saturday, and I'd like to see him break a couple nice runs just to help his confidence and get some of these angry tweeters with their pitchforks and their torches off his back a little bit. This is a talented kid. He's just entering his second year in the league. It's way too early to be making proclamations that he's a bust and not worthy of the pick. He could go out and have a really big season for this football team playing alongside Chris Carson, and they need him to. So I really want to see him come out and have a nice game against the Chargers. At receiver, I wanted to put Gary Jennings here originally just because he hasn't done anything up to this point. But instead, I'm going to go with another rookie that hasn't had a lot of opportunities, but when he's had the football in his hand, he has been a playmaker, and that is John Ursua. He has had two catches in the preseason. The first catch he made against the Broncos showed a little bit of Doug Baldwin in and made the catch and then made a guy miss. And then the second catch they had last week against the Vikings picked up big yardage. He had a really nice run on a jet sweep as well. Every opportunity that John Ursua has had to get the football in his hands, he has looked great. And I just want to see more. I'm really eager to see more John Ursua on the football field, more opportunities to get the football to him. I'd actually like to see him with the first team offense a few snaps and see what Russell Wilson can do with him working out of the slot. So I'm hoping that I get to see that as well. And then up front, I'm going to put Ethan Posick on here. He's going to get another start. Mike Iupati is not ready to return at left guard yet. He might not be ready in week one. So Posick is basically auditioning right now to be that starter if Iupati can't make it back. And he played really well against the Vikings, who have a good defensive line, by the way. Posick held his own in pass protection and as a run blocker in two drives with the starting unit. The Chargers are going to bring a really good defense as well. Even if they don't play all of their studs, there's plenty of talent in that front line. It's another good test for Posick playing with a starting lineup. Can he follow up a quality start against Minnesota with another one? I'm going to be keeping a close eye monitoring that. On the defensive side of the football, got to start off with an edge rusher, Jacob Martin. First game, he has a bunch of pressures. He looked pretty good against the Broncos. But as Samuel Gold mentioned on the show yesterday, he was a non-factor against the Vikings. You look at the depth or lack thereof that Seattle has right now with pass rushers, they need more out of Jacob Martin. He has got to step up at that Leo spot and give them a consistent rush. The Chargers have a pretty deep group of quarterbacks, so he's going to get a chance to chase after Tyrod Taylor and Cardale Jones, who are backups to Phillip Rivers. So I think this is a great opportunity for him to bounce back a little bit after a pretty quiet game against the Vikings. They need him to show he can be a consistent pass rusher for this defense. Even with Ziggy Ansah coming back, they get LJ Collier back, they still need a couple other role rushers that can come in situations and rush the quarterback. Jacob Martin is supposed to be one of those guys. Can he prove he's capable of doing that? Inside, I'm going to look at defensive tackle Earl Mitchell. Seattle has wanted Mitchell for several years. They tried to sign him before the 2017 season, ended up going to the 49ers. I'm still not sold on him making this team, however. Especially with Brian Monet and now Jamie Meter doing some nice things in preseason play. I look at his career, Mitchell. He's never been much of a pass rusher. Is he really going to help your run defense any more than Al Woods or one of the other names that I just mentioned, Jamie Meade or Brian Monet. He's an older player too, and maybe that experience is something that the Seahawks want, and I would understand that. They've had good success with older defensive tackles, especially. But to me, I need to see some good reps from Earl Mitchell to justify keeping him around with some of these younger options available that, to me, are just as good of run defenders. And, you know, maybe Mitchell's a better pass rusher than his statistics show, but I just don't see him being a lock making this team. He's got to prove it to me on the field. Now, swinging back to the secondary, two players that I'm going to have under my microscope. I'm going to start off with a starter here that needs to have a better performance than he did last week, and that's cornerback Trey Flowers. He was extremely grabby last week for the Seahawks. He drew a pass interference penalty against Minnesota's starters on the second drive, and really, he played great defense all the way up to the final second, and then he latched onto the receiver, grabbed onto his left arm. You can't do that. Refs are going to get that every single time. But he got lucky he wasn't called multiple times for pass interference. There were a couple other plays, including Deshaun Shedd's 88-yard interception, where there was an image floating around where you could see Trey Flowers latching onto his receiver's jersey, the sleeve, and he was pulling on it. That's going to get called a lot of the time. It just got missed this time. So he has to be better there. Now, Pete Carroll downplayed a lot of this. He thought he did a really nice job. There were some great plays for him in that game. But he's got to work on not being so grabby and keeping his hands off of the receivers, you know, at least in the appropriate way. Obviously, he can make contact, but he can't be pulling, holding on guys. That has got to get better. So I want to see how he holds up. The Chargers have some pretty good weapons on the outside. They got a crafty quarterback in Phillip Rivers, who's probably going to play a drive or two in this game. I want to see what Trey Flowers is made out of. And then at safety, Lano Hill, first game action for him. He has been somebody we have talked about regularly on this show that the Seahawks really like. He played well down the stretch last year before suffering a cracked hip in the season finale. Did a nice job working against George Kittle of the 49ers in coverage. He's a guy that can play in the box. And, you know, he is a really good run defender, can help on special teams as well. But I think he is fighting for his job right now, especially with Deshaun Shedd playing so well these first couple preseason games. Just think about what's around him. The Seahawks already have Marquise Blair. He's trying to work back from his back spasms, but he's played well in the two preseason games, done some nice things. You've got Bradley McDougal. Both those guys can play strong safety. Deshaun Shedd can play strong safety and free safety. Tedrick Thompson maybe is the only pure free safety that they've got on their roster. Marquise Blair can play back there too, but Thompson might be that only true center fielder that is just limited to free safety. But they've even got Shalom Luani, a guy that's been healthy, can play both spots. I think Lano Hill's just got to go out and show he's healthy. He's got to make a couple nice tackles. Maybe he does something in coverage. He's just got to reaffirm that he is the player that he was before he got hurt last year. And if he does that, I think he's still going to be on this roster. If he comes in, he doesn't look healthy, and he's not able to make plays, that complicates matters for the Seahawks because of the depth that they now have at safety. So this is certainly a bigger preseason game than you would anticipate for the third-year player. He's got to go out and show that he's healthy and ready to play football to be able to make this team. As always, greatly appreciate you taking the time to listen to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at CorbinSmithNFL. If you'd like to be a featured sponsor on the Locked On Seahawks podcast, make sure to contact me, LockedSeahawks@gmail.com. Please subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is. Visit our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Make sure to join Rob Rang and I for tomorrow's show as we preview Seattle's upcoming battle with the Chargers. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Go Hawks!